Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Acclaimed activist and filmmaker Meera Nair is this year's honorary recipient of the Woodstock Film Festival's third annual Meera Gandhi Giving Back Award. The award honors a director, producer, or actor who best delivers a message of social change and exhibits a strong compassion for philanthropy. At the festival, in addition to accepting the award, Nair will participate in the annual BMI-sponsored Music for Film panel. After several years of making documentary films, Meera Nair made a stunning entry on the world stage with her first feature, Salaam Bombay, the first Indian film to win the Camera D'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. Nair used the profits from the film's debut to create the Salaam Bachh Trust for India's street children. Her other films include Monsoon Wedding, Vanity Fair, The Namesake, and most recently, The Reluctant Fundamentalist. I spoke with Meera Nair last week and began by asking her how she decided to transition from documentary to narrative film.
Well, I came from cinema verite documentary, and it's very much the foundation of even my feature work, because I love the extraordinariness of ordinary life. I went into feature with my first film, Salaam Bombay, which this year is 25 years old, because I wanted more of an audience, frankly, and I wanted more control over light and gesture and storytelling. And I just didn't want to make a hit-and-run movie about a story that was about street kids, shot on real locations with real street kids and so on, but a real amalgam of drama and reality, because reality actually is the best drama of all, but how to amalgamate that, and also how to get a larger audience, because in the 80s, making documentaries, even though they might have been successful, did not reach many people.
The charitable organization named for that first narrative you made is also, of course, celebrating 25 years of helping India's street children. What does that milestone mean to you? What has the work that that organization has done meant to you over the years?
Well, the organization we founded from the profits of the film is called Salaam Bachh Trust. Bachh means child. And it is now, 25 years old, and it's an absolutely unbelievably heartening feeling, almost more than making a movie, because it has really directly affected and improved like 5,000 street kids a year in India. We have 17 centers now in between Delhi and Bombay of all shapes, you know, on railway platforms, like dormitories, vocational training places, a child helpline on the phone where kids help kids in psychological matters. And, you know, all kinds of city walk where kids take you on their version, the underbelly of Delhi, you know, and tell you their life. And it's just extraordinary, actually. And many kids have now become proficient in their professions and have come back and become part of our centers and so on. So it's an amazing feeling. And my mother, Praveen Nair, is the chairperson of this trust from the last 25 years, but now has a staff of about 180 social workers between Delhi and Bombay. So it's a very alive place that has directly impacted government policy, and nothing is more heartening than seeing that one can make a difference.
This is the second time you're being honored by the Woodstock Film Festival. In 2004, you received their Maverick Award, and you've participated other years. Do you like participating in film festivals, one, and two, is there something special about Woodstock?
Of course there's something special about Woodstock, especially in October, when the leaves just drive me crazy with their colors. You know, oddly enough, Woodstock was the first place I spent my first Thanksgiving in 1976, when I came as a student from India to go to Harvard on a scholarship. My local guardians lived in Woodstock, and I came there, and it was like, and you know, of course, in an Indian head, Woodstock means the real other Woodstock, the music Woodstock, which fueled us for so long, you know, the music. So for me, it was a great, it is a great place where experiment happens, and where, of course, beauty abounds in the fall. And the spirit of the Woodstock Film Festival is particularly maverick and particularly, you know, like feels grassroots, but also has the biggest visions on the planet there. So it's wonderful to meet others, because actually filmmaking is not a lonely business, but you hardly ever hang with other directors or writers. You know, you do your own work. And so it's a wonderful synergy that has been put together there.
You're participating this year in their Music in Film panel. When you started making movies and to now, how important to telling a story is the music, and when do you begin considering it for your films?
Well, I think music serves to really amplify an image in cinema, but cannot and should not be overused or abused, because I think silence is as important to cinema as music is, and without silence, music will not shine. But I love music, I'm addicted to it, and I sometimes with a film like The Namesake, I heard a piece of music before while reading the novel, even after, and while conforming, while thinking of about the film, way in advance, by Nitin Soni, and it was a folk song from Bengal, from the rivers, called the Bhatiali, in the Bhatiali method, and that made me actually call up Nitin Soni and say, please come with me on this journey and let's make the soundtrack. With Salaam Bombay, we wrote the screenplay to L. Subramaniam's Rag Kirwani. He's a great classical violinist. He'd never done a movie soundtrack. But I tracked him down in, you know, Encino, California or something a year later. And, you know, and I made two movies with him, with Salaam Bombay and Mississippi Masala. With Michael Dana, I've been fortunate enough to have a long collaboration, many films, and you know, and he's like, I call him, he's a Canadian guy, but Punjabi by nature. You know, he has this heart of, just like from our mad party animal community in India, and that I'm from. And we really share a vision that way. I mean, he's practically Indian in spirit, but he's and also such a skilled, curious, open musician. And so we've had a fun, wonderful collaboration that it will keep on going. We just actually coming together again on the musical of Monsoon Wedding for Broadway, and we have the last four songs that Michael's going to do, and you know, so it's a real sisterhood, brotherhood thing, and we, I hope, take each other further.
I want to get back to the stage adaptation, the stage musical adaptation of Monsoon Wedding, but first I wanted to ask, you're based in New York City now. How often do you get to travel to India?
No, actually, you know, I've been based in New York City for many years, but over the last 3 years, I've been more in Kampala, Uganda, where my husband teaches 8 months a year, and I have a film school there called Maisha. And you know, one can read and write, and I'm a gardener as well. So I've been spending about 6 months a year in Kampala, and a few months in between Delhi and Bombay, and then about 4 months a year in New York when he teaches in the fall again. So you know, New York is an old creative home and will always be, but I'm spending more time between India and Kampala as well.
Could you tell us more about your film school in Uganda?
Sure, sure. Actually, after Salaam Balak Trust, which was my first involvement in activism, which lasted and we are committed to, the second one has been Maisha, which is a Swahili word which means life, which is a name of our film school in East Africa. It works to train people between in the four countries of East Africa in the arts of and craft of writing and directing both feature films and documentaries. And up to the last, and it's a free school, so we raise money. We have a dynamic board, and we raise money every year, and have trained about 550 filmmakers now in these four regions, and they've all gone on to do many things. And it's really one of the few, or if even maybe the rarest, training center on the continent of Africa, because there's very little that exists to help someone take the craft of storytelling, which is an ancient craft in Africa, but and anywhere, to the making the bridge of cinema, towards cinema. So that's what Maisha is. And yeah, it takes a lot of energy, but it gives back a lot as well.
How do the students find you, and is there an application process, or do you?
Yes, a very rigorous application process on the internet. We have a website called maishafilmlab.com, And we have a number of outreach in the region between the film festivals, between and schools and college, universities and media centers. And people know about Maisha now in terms of the fact that it offers training and it's free and it's hard to get into, but it's great. And I ask, you know, writers and directors from all over the world to come and give off their time 2 weeks, you know, voluntarily, and they always do.
Uh-huh.
And they work one-on-one with our students over a 2 to 6 week period, and during which 4 short films of 15 to 20 minutes are produced and, you know, cut and made and shown at the end. So it's a real boot camp for cinema, and people know of it.
It must be so exciting for the students to have filmmakers like yourself and the people you invite really give them their hands-on experience as education.
It is. It's a very beautiful dialogue, actually, not just one-way giving,
mm-hmm.
because the students are so smart and so pretty informed, I'd say, and you know, there's an incredible dignity about it, and I end up, you know, learning as much, because the last film was directed by a Congolese refugee who was kidnapped from his home at 13 and became a child soldier till he was 15, and then is in the Congo, and then escaped and became a refugee in Uganda, and now he was about 23, and he made this film that was, you know, about Rastafarians in Kampala, which is the only family that took him in,
uh-huh.
you know, and how he found, how he was a man, as he put it, how he was a man without a tribe, and now he found a family. And it was such a startling view into a world, a city that I live in and that you think you know, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's extraordinary. And he's totally hungry for, you know, making more, and he's very, very good. So that kind of jewel in the midst is just amazing to find.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and I did want to learn a little bit more about the Monsoon Wedding Broadway musical.
Yeah.
How did the adaptation begin? Whose idea was it?
It was my late agent, the legendary Sam Cohen's idea.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great friend and an amazing man. And he also worked opposite the Paris Theatre for most of his life. And Paris Theatre had a knockout successful 6 month run or something of Monsoon Wedding, and he would go in lunch hour just to get a fix every few days of pieces of the movie. He loved this movie.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, one night at dinner, he's hanging up my coat and said, you know, you should make a musical, Monsoon Wedding. It's like crying out to be done. And it's a film that has such a lot of heart, but also great music in its bones. You know, it needs music in a way to make it what it is. Anyway, then I've been working on it now for about 7 years almost.
Yeah, musicals take a long time.
Yeah, and you know, and it's in pretty great shape now, I think. It's Sabrina Dhawan has written a wonderful book, and Vishal Bhardwaj, a wonderful music director in India, has written and composed about 7 songs out of the 11 that have to be done, and 4 songs are just about to start with Michael Dana. And we have great, you know, Steve Hendel and Margot Lyon, who are veterans of the Broadway stage, producing it. And we are, you know, what should I say, chugging along,
right.
but hoping to finish soon.
Was it always going to premiere in New York City?
You know, we don't know that yet. It's premature to say, but
okay.
Because I hope so, but it may have a tryout elsewhere and then come here, and certainly wanted to go to India as well.
Are you a fan of American musical theater generally?
Not really.
No, I wouldn't think that you would be.
Skirts and musicals don't cut it for me.
Right.
But you know, I love the modern stuff. I love Spring Awakening. I liked, you know, what's happening in some of the modern musical is just, it's great fun, and it's very skillful and spectacular. And that idea of the spectacle is something that I love, you know, to create a spectacle is a stunning thing. And in theater, and I came from the theater, I was a actor on the stage for about 4 or 5 years before I became filmmaker in India, you know. So it feels a bit weirdly like home to be back on stage. And I'm hoping to direct it, and let's see what happens. But it doesn't feel like a foreign animal fully, you know.
Uh-huh.
It feels like there's a part of me that is very much at home in the theater.
Thank you very much for joining
Thanks.
Us and have a wonderful time at the Woodstock Film Festival.
Thank you so much for your help and interest.
Meera Nair will receive the Woodstock Film Festival's third annual Meera Gandhi Giving Back Award and participate in the Music for Film panel at this year's festival. To learn more, visit woodstockfilmfestival.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.